Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our conversation about the war on poverty. It's a half a century old now and being examined. Some want to declare it a partial success. Others call it a complete failure. Now here's Florida Senator Marco Rubio, Republican, with his thoughts about how to fix the war on poverty.
Instead of continuing to pour money into our existing programs, we need to reform them through innovative and highly targeted solutions. Here's the problem. That's not something the federal government is capable of delivering. Washington is too bureaucratic and too resistant to change. And its one-size-fits-all approach to policy, it's just not conducive to solving a problem as diverse and complex as this one. Therefore, what I am proposing today is the most fundamental change to how the federal government fights poverty and encourages upward mobility since President Johnson first conceived the war on poverty 50 years ago today. I am proposing that we turn over Washington's anti-poverty programs and the trillions that are spent on them to the states. Our anti-poverty program should be replaced with a revenue-neutral flex fund.
And that was Florida Senator, Republican Marco Rubio, considered to be a candidate for president in the coming election cycle, with his thoughts about how to deal with the war on poverty. So we do see that there are ideas being presented from both sides of the aisle, and that's what we're talking about this half hour. What are some new ideas, some alternative thoughts, a way of dealing with the war on poverty or how to deal with poverty in the United States? And so we're joined this half hour with Ron Haskins. He is with the Brookings Institute on what went wrong with the campaign to end poverty. Also, we're speaking with Scott Winship at the Manhattan Institute, who is has been working with Congressman Paul Ryan about his anti-poverty positions. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
All right, so let me ask you, Ron. You're saying that there obviously something went wrong with the campaign to end poverty. What went wrong?
Well, there are a lot of things that went wrong, but there are things that were right as well. And of course, in this atmosphere, both sides are exaggerating, the Democrats exaggerating how good it is and Republicans how bad it is. I think the thing that most went wrong was that the programs, Johnson's original intention was a hand up, not a hand out. So he intended to have work incentives, and he did have several in the programs that he originated way back in 1964 and 1965. But those programs have not worked very well. And we've dramatically expanded the programs that basically just pay people who are in poverty. And so I think the biggest overall flaw of the war on poverty is not enough work incentive. In addition, it did not have incentives for marriage and for childbearing inside marriage. Probably the single thing that has made poverty the toughest to reduce is that so many of our children now live in female-headed families, and they're at least four times as likely to be poor, and also their development is affected by living apart from both of their parents.
Now, Scott, at the Manhattan Institute, tonight Paul Ryan is going to be talking at the museum in Washington, D.C. about his anti-poverty position. Any idea what he's going to be talking about?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing to acknowledge, and I think is really exciting, is that there are all of these interesting conversations that are now happening among conservatives, which is not something that we've seen in the past. I think to the extent that there's been a war on poverty, it has for too long, I think, been a conversation that's only been happening among liberals. And so it's really exciting to have a number of folks like Senator Rubio and Congressman Ryan and others talking about different sorts of approaches. I think that Congressman Ryan is likely to emphasize a lot of the same themes that Senator Rubio emphasized yesterday, the importance of states having a primary role and leveraging the local knowledge that's at the state level. I think you'll see an emphasis on work, just like we saw from Senator Rubio. I think that Ron is exactly right that to the extent that the war on poverty failed, it was because it turns out that it's really easy to reduce poverty by giving cash to people. It's an expensive approach, but it's easy to do. It's much tougher to move the needle on upward mobility and actually helping people move up over time and helping their kids move up over time.
Our phone lines are open. We do want to hear from our callers. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Jesse's been hanging on for a while. I got to get him on the air here. Jesse, welcome to the source. Go ahead. You there?
Yes. How you doing today?
Doing good. Go ahead, Jesse.
Well, this has been a very interesting conversation I've been listening to for quite a while now. And, you know, I got to tell you, you know, one of the things that we understand is to begin with is that we can't put a Band-Aid on a dam that's got so many holes in it. You know, we've got to have some accountability in order to have spending for anything. You know, we have so much money, but there's no accountability for congressmen, senators, et cetera, because they are not monitored on how money is spent, and nobody monitors the money that they make.
Okay, Jesse, some good points. Thank you for that. Thank you for calling in on that. So Ron, Jesse talks about the fact that this is a Band-Aid is not going to help when you got so many holes in the tire or whatever. So, I mean, this is going to take a multi-angled approach, you know, multiple solutions, right?
Well, there's a flaw in Jesse's view, and that is that we take just about every approach you could possibly imagine. Now we have programs for health. We have programs that focus mostly on the elderly. We have programs for unemployment. We have programs for education. We have programs for employment and training and so forth. So we try almost everything. And some of the programs are successful. I agree with almost everything Scott said, but I would amend one thing he said, and I think this is very, very important. Republicans did make a major contribution to welfare in the mid-1990s. They required in the biggest cash welfare program, then called Aid to Families with Dependent Children, that mothers work. Almost all the mothers had to work. And I would point out, consistent with Rubio's speech, that it was primarily the responsibility and the accountability was primarily placed on the states. And they were given a lot of flexibility, not unlike the Flex Fund that Rubio discussed yesterday, and given a batch of money and said, there are two things you have to do with this money. One, you need to support people who are really poor. But two is you have to make them try to find work and actually go out and look for jobs and even train for jobs if you want to do it that way. And as a result of that, low-income mothers responded exactly as the public wanted them to respond. They went out, they got work. There's a 40% increase in a particular group of low-income mothers who went to work. Nothing like that had ever happened before. And they were much better off than they had been on welfare. You cannot get out of poverty if you're in welfare. So they got income, and then we had government programs that supplemented their low wages, and as a result, child poverty fell like a rock. Poverty among female-headed family kids in female-headed families reached its lowest level ever, and poverty among black children reached the lowest level ever. So that was a distinctly Republican contribution. Eventually, it was bipartisan. Half the Democrats on the Hill voted for it and was signed by a Democratic president. So Republicans from time to time have entered this debate, and when they have, I think it's generally been quite good.
Okay, we're going to continue the conversation. We're talking about the war on poverty. We want to hear from you. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Do you think that it's been a success? Do you have some ideas how it can be worked out? You definitely want to hear how it's impacted you personally. We definitely want to hear those stories. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the war on poverty. With me in this conversation, we've got Ron Haskins. He's with the Brookings Institute. He's written about what's gone wrong with the campaign to end poverty. Also, we have on the phone line Scott Winship. He is at the Manhattan Institute. He's also worked closely with former vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan, Congressman Paul Ryan, and possible candidate for president in 2014, in 2016. We want to hear from our callers, and we've got a bunch queued up here, so let's go ahead and attack our phone lines. Kathy is called in. Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My comment is that I'm very skeptical that giving the states money is going to do anything good. So much of helping women and children out of poverty is giving them access to adequate family planning so you don't end up with even more children. And Texas certainly isn't doing that right.
Okay, Kathy, thank you for that call and those ideas. So that goes to a point that you brought up, Mr. Haskins, about the marriage and about personal responsibility. There have been studies that show that, you know, just prescribing marriage for people to avoid poverty isn't necessarily a silver bullet. It shows that they're actually, when you are in these pockets of poverty, there are few eligible mates to hook up with, to stay permanently married with. And also probably, and the greatest success that you have for reducing the poverty level in the area is of giving women more access to birth control.
I completely agree with that, at least the part about birth control. We have very, very good studies that show that first that women are quite willing to use better methods of birth control, especially so-called long-acting and reversible methods called LARC. And we have very nice studies that show that they will take them. And here's something that's really surprising, I think would be very important to Texas listeners, and that is that they substantially reduce abortion rates. They not only reduce birth rates, but they reduce abortion rates. So I think the caller is exactly right. We do have many federal programs that provide money for both for teens and for 20-somethings and 30-somethings to take birth control of various types. And we've had dramatic success with teenagers. The teenage birth rate has fallen by about between 40 and 50% since 1991. It's gone down almost every year. So these programs can work, and if they're aggressively implemented by the states, the moms or the women want them, and some of them are mothers, and they're trying to avoid second birth. So birth control is a very, 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 very important part of this picture, and it would also reduce abortion rates.
Okay, back to the phones. Roy has called in. Roy, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate that. I'm talking about basically the war on poverty, and I'm concerned about the minimum wage, and it's not enough money to make a living off of. But more importantly, there's more people making less than the people making minimum wage. And I've got two granddaughters. One's 23, the other one's 21. They both work as service workers, you know, in the restaurant industry. They make $2.13 an hour. And anybody that works for tips knows if you're scheduled for 8 hours, you've got a window of opportunity to make those tips. Well, right. More often than not, they didn't make the tips. And so they don't make enough money to find their own place to live and to, you know, to be on their own. So my question is this: how do I get them out of my house?
Okay. All right. That's a good question, Roy. Thank you for calling. I appreciate that. When LBJ called for the war on poverty, a minimum wage, I think, was $1.10 at the time. Of course, now we're hearing calls to bring it up to $10.10. Would that be a possible solution to help people get out of poverty if the minimum wage went up? Scott?
Well, you know, I think it's important. We all I think want to do whatever we can to help low-wage workers who are struggling. They're doing the right thing. They're working and trying to better themselves. And so you can understand the appeal of an increase in the minimum wage. The problem is that we're still in a fairly weak recovery. Employers are a little bit gun-shy about hiring folks already. And I think when you start talking about increasing the minimum wage as much as the proposals that are on the table, from $7.25 to over $10 an hour, you know, that's a really big increase. It's a really big increase in the cost of hiring, and I think it's just the wrong time to impose that sort of burden on employers. If what we want to do is make sure that we're reducing the ranks of the unemployed, we have a really bad long-term unemployment problem right now. I also think the minimum wage, when you measure things the right way, historically it's not much lower than it's been in the past. It's about at the average that it was in the 1960s and 1970s. And raising it to $10 an hour would really be unprecedented, both in the increase that we would see all at once, but also in the eventual level that we raise it to, and I think it's just a dangerous time to try to experiment without having a sense of what the consequences are going to be.
But there have been some new other ideas on how to deal with the minimum wage. One of them is having the federal government subsidize increases to the minimum wage, where you're an employer, and the government gives you that extra $3 to get it to $10. Or there's also some people are calling for this guaranteed minimum income that you see in Europe and other places around the world. So, Ron, how does that work?
Yeah, I don't think the United States is never going to have a guaranteed income, I don't think. It's way too controversial. It would require a huge increase in taxes. We'd have to borrow more money from the Chinese and others. So I don't think that's on the horizon. Besides that, the caller should know, and folks who are your listeners should know, that the federal government runs a program called the Earned Income Tax Credit. And families can get up to low-wage working families with children can get up to $5,000 a year from the Earned Income Tax Credit. In fact, the bottom 40% of Americans do not pay federal income taxes. They pay negative income taxes because they get money back from the Child Tax Credit and the Earned Income Tax Credit. The Earned Income Tax Credit, you have to work to get it, so it's not welfare, and you get more as you work, and then it levels off, and then it phases out, so not every worker gets it. It's only low-income workers. So it's very well-targeted, and it does a lot to reduce poverty. It's probably our single most effective anti-poverty program. And it's a much better way to go than minimum wage, because the minimum wage, think about it, you're imposing the burden on the employer, which is the very person that you want to do the hiring. But by Earned Income Tax Credit, the cost is shared by all taxpayers, and as I've just said, that means the upper 60% of income earners in the United States are actually subsidizing this supplement to the low-income workers' wages.
Okay, more phone calls to get to. John has called in. John, welcome to The Source. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Thank you, and gentlemen, a very interesting conversation. But I can't help but hear some doublespeak about the role of the federal government. Because at the same time where we're proposing more money and reshuffling the money in different programs to give people a hand up out of poverty, this is the same government in the same conditions that can't pass a farm bill that helps subsidize some of the most vulnerable industries, where there's proposals to change the way the military retirement works, where there's other programs that are being cut and slashed for people that are not part of that social welfare, but it'll help drive them towards needing those social welfare services if the trend continues.
Okay, John, great comments. Appreciate that. So, Scott, anything to say to that?
Well, I think that is a challenge for conservatives as they are crafting new agendas to reduce poverty and promote mobility, is that work is certainly the most important thing, and I agree with Ron's earlier comments that that welfare reform really was one of the better pro mobility programs that we've had in the last few decades. On the other hand, we can't necessarily expect that if we get more low-income people to work, that necessarily is going to give their kids a boost and improve their kids' outcomes when they grow up to be adults. And so I do think we need to be prepared to spend a little bit more money to try to discover some models that work for promoting mobility. There are a lot of models that don't work, and I think we have to be prepared to stop spending money on a lot of the programs that we currently fund that really are not productive.
Okay. I want to get another caller in on this real quick because we're running out of time. Clayton has called in. Thanks for calling in, Clayton. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. And I would just like to comment that I think it is an insult to the intelligence of every American to insinuate that our economic malaise has been now or has ever been because of the handouts that we give to the individual citizens. I think we should stop giving the handouts to the businesses that are raking in record profits before we start talking about taking money away from people who are maybe ripping off food stamps for a couple hundred dollars a month. And I'll listen to the reply off the air.
Okay, Clayton, thanks for calling in. So, you know, Clayton is voicing what many people are thinking, you know, that we've got record profits, we've got record stock markets, high income, gross inequality in income, and we're talking about poverty and acting like we don't have any ways to deal with that. Ron?
2 points. First, we have an extremely progressive tax code. About 85% of income taxes are paid by the upper 20% of wage earners, and the further up you go, the more taxes they pay. So that's one thing that people should keep in mind, that we do have a very progressive tax code, and the bottom 40% don't pay any taxes, income taxes, federal income taxes at all. And the second point is that we also have a means-tested system that provides lots of money to low-income folks. In fact, we spend about $1 trillion.
Ron, we're running out of time. I got your points in. Thank you so much, Ron Haskins from the Brookings, and also Scott Winship from the Manhattan Institute. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening. This week on Texas Matters, attorney David Dowell has made a career out of defending death row inmates in Texas, and frequently it was up to him to deliver the dreaded news of that failed last appeal. Dowell said he thought he knew death, but a turn of events proved him wrong. Dowell joins us to discuss his new book, Things I've Learned from Dying, on Texas Matters, Friday at 3:30 on KSTX.
5 years after Bernie Madoff was arrested, are we safe from the Ponzi scheme? Here's a hint, no. The story next time on Marketplace from APM.
You can hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on News and Views at 89.1 KSTX.
From the KSTX Community Events Calendar, the Comal County Unitarian Universalist Society in New Braunfels will host a screening of Queen of Sun, What Bees Are Telling Us, Friday at 6:30. Also on Friday, the Silver and Black Give Back presents the 2014 Tuxentennis Gala Fundraiser at the AT&T Center from 5 to 11. And Fort Martin Scott in Fredericksburg presents a living history reenactment of the Battle of New Orleans on Saturday at noon. Find details on these events and more at tpr.org.
This is KSTX San Antonio. Good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock.